The Institute.
Institute.
Institute for Justice.
The National Law Firm for Liberty.
Welcome to Deep Dive with the Institute for Justice. I'm Melanie Hildreth, and I'm here with IJ attorneys Andrew Ward and Josh House. As we record today's show, California firefighters are battling a record wildfire season. One of those firefighters is an IJ client. And even though he has years of experience and is on the front lines right now risking his life, the state has said that he can't make a career as a firefighter. So we're going to talk about the kind of law that make that happen, called a collateral consequence law. But first, I wanted to talk about our client's story. Andrew, who is it that we're representing in California, and why does he want to be a firefighter in the first place?
Good morning. We represent a man named Dario Garola. And I should say, by the way, if anybody hears the construction that's going on outside my apartment on this recording, I'm sorry about that. We represent Dario Garola. And this is a person who had trouble when he was younger. He actually has two felony convictions from 2003 and 2005. But since then, he has turned his life around. When he was incarcerated, he served in California's fire camps, which they have for inmates. And he found that he really loved being a first responder. A captain there actually told him that this was something that he could do once he got out. So he's been out of prison for almost a decade, and he's dedicated himself to becoming a first responder. That's actually a long tradition in his family. His father's a San Diego sheriff. He has an uncle in law enforcement, and he wanted to go out and help people. And ever since then, he's dedicated himself to doing that. He's served for four seasons as a seasonal firefighter. He's taken hours and hours, hundreds of hours of training. He has dozens of certifications. And as you mentioned, he is on the front lines right now protecting the homes and lives of Californians.
So if he is on the front lines, listeners might be thinking, you know, what's the problem? He's fighting fires right now. What is there for IJ to sue about? Josh, can you talk about, you know, our case and what the problem is that Dario is facing?
Sure. Well, and yeah, the fact that he is currently able to fight fires and yet isn't allowed to do so as a long-term career is part of why this whole system is so irrational. So Dario is allowed to fight fires seasonally. He's allowed to fight fires as a volunteer firefighter with various municipal fire departments. But if he wants a career in a municipal fire department, virtually all of those positions require an EMT certification. EMT certification is a basic certification. It doesn't entitle you to automatically work as an ambulance driver or to go into people's homes. It just shows that you have basic life maintenance and first aid response abilities. And in fact, it's a common qualification for people such as outdoor wilderness guides or a gym attendant who just want to show that they have this basic first aid knowledge. But in California, you cannot get certified as an EMT if you have a felony on your background. You're banned for life if you have two felonies, and you're banned for 10 years after your release from either prison or from supervision if you only have one felony. And these are flat bans. It's not certain felonies. It's not particularly bad felonies. It's just if the crime that you committed happened to be arbitrarily categorized as a felony, you are banned from getting that EMT certification. And this is irrational. It's irrational not only because, as I mentioned, Dario can do the same tasks, much of the same tasks in his current position as a seasonal firefighter, including medical calls or calls where he goes into people's homes. But it's this situation is also irrational because there are many times when people will commit the exact same crimes and yet they get downgraded to misdemeanors. Certain plea bargains allow the person to not have the felony on their record. And those people are virtually untouched by this regulation. And so you have a system where because of, you know, however the mysterious criminal justice system happens to work out in your case, you can either be banned for life or not at all. And that's just an irrational way of deciding who is qualified to be an emergency medical technician.
So what are the claims that we're bringing in our case? It's like it's obvious that this is totally irrational, and it's even more so in California right now where they desperately need help fighting fires. How do you bring that into a lawsuit, though? Just say this law doesn't make any sense. What are the arguments that you make?
Well, as IJ does in many cases, we bring a claim under the 14th Amendment. Actually, it's two different claims. One, it's under the Due Process Clause, and another under the Equal Protection Clause. The Due Process argument is basically that the government needs a good reason to deprive you of your right to earn an honest living. And that reason cannot be arbitrary. It has to be consistent with due process of law. And here we're arguing that it makes no sense. It is completely arbitrary to ban someone from doing, from getting a certification that would give them the required qualification to do some of the same things that they're already allowed to do, just because you don't want them to get a paying career in it. You know, it's if you can do this stuff for free, or if you can do it part-time, why can't you do it full-time? The public is not made any safer keeping you from just doing it more effectively more of the time. And really that's what this is about, right? Is his ability to get an EMT certification to show that he's qualified to do this activity that he's still doing right now, but just on this kind of part-time basis. Why prevent him from getting a certification that shows he's more qualified? So that's kind of our due process argument. The equal protection argument is more focused on the point I made before about, you know, felony is an arbitrary classification. And it's just simply against principles of equal protection of the laws that people can do, that some people can get this EMT certification, despite perhaps even committing far worse crimes. And then people who didn't get the luck of getting a misdemeanor plea deal, let's say, are banned totally. And a good example of that would be, for example, somebody who is is able to, because of, they get a lawyer, they're able to go into court, they're able to negotiate, they're able to get the plea deal with the misdemeanor. It's somebody who maybe is either less sophisticated or simply is in not as good an economic position to get a lawyer, they end up just taking the first plea that'll let them be released and you know, kind of get out of jail. And that might include felonies. They may say, you know, I'll take the felony, not understanding that these collateral consequences are coming way down the line that are going to prevent them from earning an honest living. And so that's kind of the equal protection argument, which is just the felony misdemeanor distinction is not suited to EMT qualifications. It's completely arbitrary, and it's not an equal way of determining who can be an EMT certification.
So you mentioned the words collateral consequences earlier on in the show. I mentioned those words. That might not be a term that is familiar to most people, like a collateral consequence law. Could you define it for people? What kinds of laws does a collateral consequence law include?
Sure. So collateral consequences are consequences that are collateral to a criminal punishment. They're not considered part of the punishment, but they are consequences that flow from it. A good example, a very popular one, would be something like a registry, like everyone's familiar with the sex offender registry, or you might have, some sort of any sort of like listing where you have to make your criminal convictions public. And something like that, the courts have said, are not actually part of the criminal conviction. So they don't go into, you know, the main sentence that the judge reads to you when you're found guilty. They are kind of civil consequences that come later. And unfortunately, there's just been a huge explosion of these consequences all over the place. And part of the problem is that if someone doesn't know about a consequence at the time or they're enacted later, unfortunately, courts have said, well, it doesn't matter. You know, they're so collateral, they're so separate from your original sentence that you didn't need notice of them. So maybe when you took the plea deal, for example, you're like, well, I didn't know that this was going to result in me having to register for this list. I didn't know that this was going to have to result in me not being able to get a job. I just didn't know those things. Maybe those laws weren't passed yet. And what courts have said is because these are collateral, they're not actually part of the sentence. You don't need notice when you're actually sentenced. And this, you know, the explosion of these consequences has put a lot of people into a bad spot where, you know, many, many people feel like they've paid their debt to society. They finished their sentences and they want to get a second kind of chance at succeeding in life. And they're deprived of that because they have these consequences that many of which will follow them around for the rest of their lives, as is the case with Dario and his felony convictions.
It does feel really unfair that you could, you know, just based on the quality of the attorney or, you know, just the considerations that you're dealing with at the time, you look at the sentence and you think that that's what you get. And it's just like, okay, I just have to get through it. And then you get on the other side and just can be completely gobsmacked by a whole host of other things. I mean, how does that does feel very unfair. And I think that most people would think, like, how does that happen? How did the way that dealing with criminal convictions kind of the burgeoning of these collateral consequences laws on the back end, where did that come from?
Well, I mean, a lot of these laws came out of an explosion, as I mentioned before, just kind of from the 80s and 90s. It was kind of all at once. And a lot of it was this kind of tough on crime rhetoric that was popular in the political discourse around then. Actually, many states prior to that had started reforming a lot of their criminal collateral consequences. They've actually started enacting rules that said things like, well, you have to be, the crime has to be somewhat related to the consequence. So if I'm going to be prevented from being an EMT, the crime I committed has to be related, let's say, to the medical field or to EMT work. And so a lot of states were passing these relatively good reforms back in the 70s and early 80s. But then as the kind of tough on crime movement took off, you saw more and more of these consequences getting stacked on. And of course, as we're all familiar with laws, it's a lot easier to stack things on than it is to kind of undo them. And you know, the fact that so many of these were not considered part of the sentence, and so therefore couldn't be considered like excessive in terms of the actual punishment imposed on someone, meant that for a long time they kind of went unnoticed. And then it wasn't until later that people would go, wait, I can't get this job or I can't get this license, that they'd realize kind of, oh my gosh, like my sentence in effect is much bigger than I thought. And I think finally people are catching up to that realization. You know, the ban the box movement, for example, is kind of a very popular example of this. There's also the movement in various states about voting rights for people who are convicted ex-felons. And so I think right now people are realizing, wait, we've been depriving a lot of people of their opportunity to get reintroduced back into society, or re-entered is the term that's often used, because of these consequences that have just stacked up for years and years.
And, you know, Josh is not exaggerating here. There are so many of these consequences, just as it relates to occupational licensing. So saying you might not be able to work because you have a felony conviction or because you don't have good moral character. There are so many of these laws that no one even knows how many there are, but it's in the tens of thousands. One estimate from a couple years ago was 27,254. I mean, there are just loads and loads of these. And some of them, of course, are legitimate. No one is saying that if you just got convicted of embezzlement or something, you should get to be an accountant the next day. But unfortunately, a huge number of these just don't have any relationship to the license being sought. In California, it's any felony for EMT certification. And that means that people are getting denied the right to work because of irrelevant criminal convictions.
So speaking of trying to get a handle on the scope of the problem, recently IJ actually, as in taking on the problem of collateral consequences, released a report called Barred from Working that really kind of tries to get a handle on the protection for people who have prior convictions and what the law looks like in different states and between states and within states, how much does it make sense? And could you talk a little bit about what we find in that report? What are some of the top line takeaways from the survey of all 50 states and their collateral consequences laws?
Sure. I mean, looking at the report, I mean, really its big use is grading the states. And so this was a great report put together by IJ's legislative analyst, Nick Sibilla, and it rates all the states based on, you know, the reforms that they've enacted, similar to the ones that I mentioned earlier from an earlier time. You know, many states have tried doing this again, really cabining what sort of restrictions can be placed on you based on the crimes that you committed, kind of making it more narrowly tailored to exactly what you did and what you can be denied doing. So two states get A grades, that's New Hampshire and Indiana, and they've enacted at least portions of IJ's model bill. The report also shows that 33 states over, I guess, over the last 5 years about have eliminated licensing barriers for people with criminal records. And so this is a trend on the up as far as IJ is concerned. There's a lot of movement giving people back their right to earn an honest living and getting away from the kind of vague, for example, moral character requirements that Andrew mentioned, which, you know, can kind of be inconsistently applied, can be applied in a kind of capricious manner by licensing boards that simply want to keep out new people from being licensed. So this is it's an area where there is a lot of movement in, but unfortunately there's still far too many of these good moral character requirements. I mean, 15 states, in only 15 states can boards not look at these good moral character requirements. So there's still work to be done in plenty of other states.
So Andrew mentioned, maybe 30,000 collateral consequence laws. As you look to reform the law, you mentioned that Indiana, New Hampshire, their laws are much better. What kind of recommendations is IJ making? If we don't even know how bad it is, for instance, in Nevada, like we know it's bad, it's an F. But how do you, if you can't even catalog all of the problems, how do you go about fixing it? What recommendations are we making to lawmakers who do want to make things better?
Right. So, going back to what I was saying before is a lot of it has to do with tailoring the sort of crimes that can actually result in a collateral consequence. So really putting some teeth on the idea that what you did has to be related in some way. So maybe you can't be a banker if you've committed financial fraud. There is a clear link between those two. But maybe you had a drug possession conviction in your youth. That has nothing to do really with whether or not you can be a successful banker years later. The second thing that the model legislation that IJ has presented does is it allows people to kind of know ahead of time whether they would be denied under the certain restrictions that are applicable before they go through all their training, certification, the application process. I mean, a good example is someone like Dario, who didn't realize until the very end of all of his training that he was going to be denied the EMT license. So he was able to, go through Fire Academy, finish the schoolwork. He was able to actually take the National Registry for Emergency Medical Technicians test and pass it. He was able to do a bunch of optional certifications, which would make him a better firefighter and a better first responder. And then when he gets to the application process, he's denied. Well, someone in that circumstance is going to be really hurting because they've spent plenty of money and time preparing themselves for a career that now at the end of the road, they're told they can no longer do. So it's part of IJ's model is, I would say part of IJ's model is making sure that doesn't happen, letting them know ahead of time before they engage in all that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like it's like the peanuts with the football, where you run and then it gets pulled away right at the end. And I just can't imagine how devastating that would be.
And that's actually a sentiment that we've heard from a lot of people, especially the people who serve in the prison fire camps in California. They're told, as was Dario, that this is a way they can make a career. They can start the training in prison. And in fact, this is something that we see all over the country, this kind of irrational system of getting trained to do a profession and then not being able to, while in prison, but not being able to do it once released. And a case that IJ recently won, and that I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit, is the Pennsylvania case involving cosmetologists. They were training people in prisons in Pennsylvania to be cosmetologists, and yet those same people were being denied as soon as they were released from that career, which makes no sense, of course.
Well, so yeah, let's talk about that case, because it kind of brings us back to, as much as we have to say about, in terms of studies and in terms of legislation, as a law firm, our favorite thing to do is sue the government. And so we have the case in California, and about a year and a half ago, we filed a case in Pennsylvania just dealing with that good moral character requirement that Andrew mentioned earlier. And Andrew, that was a case that you put together, and I wondered if you could talk about what it was we challenged there, what the clients were facing, and the status of that lawsuit.
Of course, that was a case we filed in December 2018. We represented two young women who had sort of similar stories to Dario. When they were younger, they made mistakes, they had problems. Both of them had substance abuse issues. One of them had a problem with drugs and did some time in prison, about 2 years. The other one had a misdemeanor record, but they both turned their lives around. The system really actually worked for them. One went into AA and became a mentor for other young women. Our other client, her name's Amanda, she started working at 4:45 in the morning at McDonald's, just trying to do everything she could to get her life back in order. And they both thought that, I really like helping other people look good and helping other people feel good. And they both ended up going to beauty school, deciding to try to become estheticians. So people who focus on, you know, facials and eyebrows and the care and beauty of the face. And they spent months and thousands of dollars going to beauty school. And then when they went to apply for their licenses, they were told, you have to prove you're a good person. Because in Pennsylvania, there was this requirement, a good moral character requirement, where if you wanted to go and work in a salon, you could be barred because of your criminal record. Our other client, Courtney, had misdemeanors stemming from three different times. You know, there was a DWI, there was a fight she got in at a casino where no one was hurt. And these were years and years ago. And since then, she totally changed her life. She wanted to make more money to be able to support her son. And the cosmetology board said, no, you have to prove that you're a good person. Amanda even went to a hearing. She drove from Pennsylvania all the way to Harrisburg with her family and talked about how she had turned her life around. And this state sort of quasi judge said, oh, well, you're trying to say you're a good person, but you only brought your father. Why didn't you bring an unbiased party to tell us how you've changed? Or, oh, you say you're going to church now. Do you have any proof that you're going to church? I don't think this is enough. And so because of a criminal record that, of course, had nothing to do with working in a salon from years and years earlier, they said she didn't have good character and she wasn't allowed to try to get a better career that had more pay and better hours and a way for her to really work on that second chance she was trying so hard to get. Now, we challenge that both because whether or not you're a good person, quote,
it's a theological question.
Yeah, I don't.
It's like The Good Place. How do you prove it? You have the point system that, you know, the judge keeps track, like a menu of points where good deeds earn you a certain.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, and it's easy to make light of, but there were no standards at all. The chair of the cosmetology board in a deposition said, oh, I don't know. What's a good person? It means different things to different people. It depends on who the person judging is. Maybe your race, maybe your religion, all these things could make your view of someone else change. So I have no idea. Well, can you at least tell me if one crime is worse than another? You know, here's a person who had killed a child and that person was allowed to get a license. Is that worse than giving alcohol to minors? I don't know. Who can say? They didn't have any standards at all. And so we challenged this as bringing similar claims to what we're bringing now with Dario's case in California, both that it's irrational. It just doesn't matter if you're a good person to be able to work in a salon. Both of our clients, in fact, had job offers, and Courtney was working in a salon throughout this entire case. She was working as a shampooist. And so this is what this law said. She could work in a salon. She could be there washing people's hair. She just couldn't go one chair over and work on their eyebrows and use the training that she actually had. Somehow that was this thing that was going to keep people safe. And the other claim we brought, as in California, was an equal protection claim that other salon employees didn't have the same kind of requirement. And in particular, barbers who do very similar work, also work in salons, didn't have a good moral character requirement. It was just this one field that tends to be mostly women that had to prove that they were good when no one else in a salon had to.
So we brought the lawsuit. You went in before the judge, made your case, and we got a decision. Yes, just recently. How did it shake out?
We got a decision in the summer of 2020, and yeah, we won. The court agreed with us that this is completely irrational. If you don't need good moral character to use a straight razor, if you're a barber, there was just no reason you would need it to use tweezers. So the court agreed with us, said that this law is irrational, and the board's not allowed to enforce it anymore. And in fact, the win goes beyond that because the lawsuit also helped inspire legislative reform. So not only did a court strike down this requirement, Pennsylvania ended up repealing all good moral character requirements for every license across the entire state. So I'd call that a real win.
Yeah, highly leveraged. Well, and so just the to kind of wrap things up, Josh, based on the decision we got in Pennsylvania, both, you know, the strong support, you know, in the courtroom from the judge, and then in the legislature with the kind of reform that Andrew was mentioning, how do you feel that the prospects are going forward for Dario and just this kind of litigation as we look ahead to the future and to try to improve the opportunities for people who have had past mistakes?
Well, I mean, I think things are really looking up. You know, not only do we feel confident about our lawsuit in California, but actually recently in California, they enacted a bill that would allow people who worked in the prison fire camps to get their records expunged for those crimes while for which they were serving time when they worked in the camp. Now, it's only a partial victory. It doesn't help clients like Dario, who committed crimes and were serving time at times when they didn't work in the camps. It only applies to kind of certain things. And frankly, it's also only a partial victory because it still forces these same people to get lawyers, to go through the court process and try to get an expungement. And it gives judges discretion to deny expungements for any reason. So, you know, it's definitely a move in the right direction. And it just shows that in California, even the legislators there are seeing that this system doesn't make sense. It does not make sense to have these people fighting fires while they're in prison, being paid only a pittance, and then deny them the right to a fulfilling long-term career as a fire department employee when they reenter society. So I mean, it's a move in the right direction, and you know, I think we're very optimistic about our case. You know, and I will say, look, in both the Pennsylvania case and here, there are plenty of other ways where if society wants to protect people from people that it deems dangerous, there are plenty of other rules that actually apply to keep someone who actually has a background that would be relevant to the career they want to do. In California, for instance, there's just an entirely different statute that basically says, if what the person did is related directly to the profession, so maybe they, for example, they were a licensed cosmetologist and they hurt someone in their salon, that's a reason that you could deny somebody. But what our two cases show is that's a long way away from these kind of generalized moral character requirements, and it's a long way away from these kind of generalized, well, you're a felon and you're not, and we're going to treat you guys differently because of this word we've assigned to one and not the other. I think that people are starting to see, okay, there are better ways to protect the public, and the way not to do it is to keep people who can do these things part-time, who can do them for free, from giving back, you know, really being able to serve the state that so many of them really feel a connection with, and they feel like they want to start to kind of give back as a way of making a sort of penance for their background. And people like Dario derive a lot of meaning from this work. He has called me while he's been on the front lines fighting these fires and just said, you know, it's a lot of work, but I mean, this is why he did what wanted to do all that schooling. This is what he trained for, right? He's there doing what, serving people the best way he knows how. And I think California will only, and other states will only do good if they allow people that are that passionate and that qualified to continue serving their states.
And yeah, they deserve a second chance.
I mean, absolutely. America is a land of second chances, and you know, people moving here for a new opportunity, and people like Dario that are not only want a new opportunity, but are completely qualified for it, should be given the opportunity to have that second chance.
Well, thank you both for joining me, and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, you can find more on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe.